of you heard the hubbub in the news this last week about Kanye West's new album? Did anybody hear about this? A few of you did. Kanye West, if you don't know who he is a singer, he's a songwriter, he's a music producer, he's has done some fashion design things with Nike and whatnot. And he's been kind of a controversial figure in the past. He has kind of foot in the mouth disease. He has a way of sometimes stepping in. I think one of the more famous incidents was back in, I think it was about four or five years ago, one of the TV award shows. Taylor Swift was giving an acceptance speech, and he went up and interrupted the whole thing and started talking about Beyonce and how she should have won something, and ended up having to come back and do apologies. And he's had a whole series of episodes like he's been kind of a controversial figure. And this past week, he wound up in the news because he's released a new album, and the album is called Jesus is King. And Kanye West has had some kind of conversion experience, and he released essentially a gospel style album. All of the music is praise worship oriented music, and it's been crazy, the response to it. The first day that it came out, 9 of the 10 top downloads on Spotify were all from that album, because people were like, what's on there? What's it like? What's it sound like? If you Google, and I did this last yesterday, if you Google, and they did something like Kanye West album or something like that, you get a response all across the spectrum. NBC had an article headed, Kanye West, Christian conversion is less about Jesus and more about Kanye. So their take is, you know, this is all self-aggrandizement. Time magazine had how Kanye's controversial Jesus is King album is dividing the Christian community. The Christian Post wrote, Christians should accept Kanye no matter how fashionably late he may be. I thought that was an interesting line. Trevor Noah, news personality, he called him out as a hypocrite. So, I mean, it's just been all over the map. Some are saying, oh, he's just doing this for financial gain. Others are saying, I don't care what he's motivated by. God's being glorified. You know, he's had some Sunday service. He has these Sunday service performances now, and there are thousands of people there. Coming forward for altar calls, and he's definitely affecting some lives for the kingdom.
And not normally open.
Right. You know, Susan was saying, in a community that normally would be resistant, he's reaching people that we, as sort of the main line, you know, what you stereotypically think about Christians, we're not reaching. And I raised that up this morning because I feel like it's timely. It, to me, almost feels like a Zacchaeus story, right? Because Zacchaeus was this wealthy guy. Everybody would have known him, chief tax collector. There would have been people who loved him. There would have been people who hated him. One of the things Kanye's had a lot of conflict around is his political views. I guarantee that Zacchaeus was on the wrong side of the politics of his folks because he was sort of in bed with the Roman government. Now, what's fascinating is, I'm sure, like, because human nature has not changed, that if there were a time in NBC and whatnot, they would have been writing the exact same kind of articles about Zacchaeus, right? You know, like it would have been, people would have been sitting around in the pubs of Jerusalem, if you will, going, I think that Zacchaeus guy is a phony, and they didn't wait. They started the moment it happened, because what we're told is the people grumbled, and there's two ways you can read this story. And the verdict is out for me a little bit, and I'm actually leaning against the way it's traditionally been kind of read, and let me explain. The normative way to read this story is that Zacchaeus is this bad guy, you know, a corrupt tax collector, and he encounters in Jesus, and because he encounters Jesus, his heart changes, and he decides, I'll no longer defraud people, I'll give them back their money, and I'm going to be fair in my practice, and I'm going to be generous. I'm going to take from my income, and I'm going to give to the poor. And he goes to his house, and everybody's upset about that. Now, that's kind of the traditional way to read it. I find that interesting, and I'm actually getting to where I'm kind of going to starting to side against it to a different way of understanding, and I'll explain why. The other way you could understand this story is that Zacchaeus is actually a fairly righteous person. You're going to be like, what? I'll explain. He's a fairly righteous person, and this is one of those stories where Jesus, and there's a lot of these stories, and many of them are in Luke, where Jesus will take someone that we want to pigeonhole as bad, and they end up being the example of what is good. Like, a little further back in Luke, there was a leper who was Samaritan, you know, a big outcast, a person who should have been rejected. There were 10 lepers. They got healed, and the one who comes back is a Samaritan. And that's the one that the Jewish audience would have been like, that's the guy who shouldn't come back, right? So the underdog, the one that everybody should look down on, is the one that has the exemplary behavior. Similar story, Roman soldier, Roman centurion who comes, and he has so much faith that Jesus doesn't even need to come to his daughter. He just says, say the word, and I know my daughter will be healed. And Jesus ends up talking about how exemplary his faith is. Like, truly, I've not seen faith like this in Israel. And he's a Roman soldier. Again, one of the guys that should have been the bad guy and gets showcased as Jesus by Jesus as the good guy. Now, why would I say that about Zacchaeus? And it's because of this. I do not understand why more current translations translate. There's a couple verbs in here. When Zacchaeus says, I will give, fourfold to anybody I've defrauded. I will give, I'll double what I give to the poor. When he says that, modern translations translate it, I will give, future tense. That Greek word, and in older translations, is actually present tense. If we just translated it the way it's written, it would say, I give, I am giving. Like, it's present tense. I'm giving. So the way this story reads then is, Jesus sees Zacchaeus and says, come on down. And the people start grumbling. And it actually says, Zacchaeus stopped. Right? So he hears them grumbling and he stops. And it's kind of a, hey, wait a minute. I give twice what I give to the poor. If I do something wrong, I pay back four times, and it's present tense. I am giving. And he's supposed to be the bad guy. It feels, when you read it the way it's written, it feels much more like these other stories where we have someone like a Roman centurion that everybody should be against, who has great faith. We had a contrasting story, and I don't think this is coincidental, but just shortly prior to this, we have a wealthy ruler who abides by all of the law. He comes and he says, hey, you know, I have kept, what do I need to do to inherit the kingdom of God? He said, and Jesus says, well, you need to keep the commandments, and he says some of them, he goes, I've done all that. I'm the good guy. I've done all that. And he says, well, then there's just one thing you need to do. Give away what you have and follow me. Give it to the poor. Zacchaeus, just a short bit later in the same gospel, is the reverse story if we understand it the way I just interpreted it. Because what we have instead is not a guy who looks like, on the surface to the public, he's a bad guy. Everybody ought to be against him. But he is giving what he has to the poor, and he is choosing to follow Jesus. The rich young ruler who seems to have it all together, that everybody's applauding as a good guy, what's he do? We're told he was very sad and he walked away. But what does Zacchaeus do? Zacchaeus has the absolute, complete opposite reaction. It says, and he happily went, or something like that. Some translations say, and gladly he followed Jesus and they went to his home. Gladly. It's the absolute, complete opposite story if we understand it the way it's written. Either way, here's the thing I want to lift up. Whether Zacchaeus, we could debate whether Zacchaeus is a good guy or bad guy all day long. Just like people are doing in the paper with Kanye, right? We could sit here and we could fight over whether he's a hypocrite, whether he's doing it for this, whether his heart is genuinely changed and he's positively impacting the kingdom. We could debate that all day long. The story is in here not to teach us about Zacchaeus. This story is in here to teach us about Jesus and about God. And where our attention ought to be, and it ought to be with the Kanyes or anything else that comes along where we kind of go, wait a minute, that's not how we do it in the church. Anybody ever hear that? That's not how we do it in the church, and we start grumbling, which is essentially what's going on here. Our question shouldn't be about the person. Our question should be, is this God at work? Is this God at work in his wideness of mercy, in his wildness of mercy? Because if it's God at work, we don't want to get in the way. we don't want to be the grumbling one, right? But we have, I think, a reflexive nature in the church. When something is outside of our box and God starts coloring outside our little lines of how we normally do things in the church, we have an instinctive reaction to immediately go, what's he doing? I can't believe that. We get in that grumbly mode. We really need to slow down and gut check and instead say, is this the Lord at work? And if it is the Lord at work, we need to trust. And we need to ask God to humble our hearts, soften our hearts, to get on board with what he's blessing. There's a really wonderful series, just the name will come to me here in a moment. Has to do with following God. Anyways, there's a wonderful series came out a few years ago on living Christian life. And the author in this series said, he makes a point that we should stop trying to ask God to bless what we are doing. We should start looking for what God is blessing and get on board with what God is doing. And I'm like, oh, that's a different way of living. It's the difference between getting up in the morning and kind of treating God like he is your virtual assistant for the day. Like, okay, God, I got a busy day today. I've got this at work. Make it go really well for me. I have a test. Help me pass. and all those things we throw on God's to-do list. It's like, oh God, here's my honey-do list for the day. It's the difference between that and waking up in the morning and going, God, I'm your servant, and I don't know what you have in mind for day, but I want to be a part of it. Please point out to me, help me be aware of where you need me and what you need me to do today. That's humble service. That's when we start treating God as the Lord of our lives, and not, some cosmic bellhop, that's there to grab our bags for the day. And Zacchaeus, I just wonder if Zacchaeus isn't a guy who actually really gets it a whole lot better than many of us do, though he has the reputation of being a bad, bad guy. And he may have earned it, or he may not have. He just may have had the label. It's easy to get pigeonholed by people. Just because, they put a label on you, and the next thing you know, you're dirt, and they make all kinds of assumptions about you. Let us have open hearts to watch for where God's working, and be servants around it. I'm going to close with this. There's an old, and you guys may have heard this before. It's very short. There is an old parable called the life-saving station. It's one of those things that I think that it's timeless, though you may have heard it. I'll share it with you. It goes this way. It says, on a dangerous seacoast where shipwrecks often occur, there once was a crude little life-saving station. The building was just a hut, and there was one boat, and there were a few devoted members who kept constant watch over the sea. And with no thought for themselves, they went out day and night tirelessly, they're rescuing people who are getting shipwrecked. Well, some of those who were saved and various others in the surrounding area, they wanted to become associated with a station. They thought this could work. And they jumped in and they started supporting it. And soon they got newer boats and new crews and the little station started growing. Well, some of the members of the life-saving station were unhappy that the building was kind of crude and it was poorly equipped. So they felt that a more comfortable place would be provide a better refuge for the people they saved from the sea. And they replaced the emergency cots with nice beds, and they put better furniture in, they got a larger building, and they gathered there as members, and they decorated it beautifully and furnished it. And before you knew it, people got less and less interested in going out to sea on life-saving missions. They just loved to be at the hut. It became kind of their club. They saved the life-saving motif in all their club decorations, but by and large, it just became their club. Well, about this time, a large ship was wrecked off the coast, and the hired crews brought in all these boatloads of cold, dirty, wet, half-drowned people. And the beautiful new club was just in chaos. What are these people doing here? So the property committee, you need a committee by that time, right? Property committee gets together and says, hey, we need to build a shower house so we can clean these people up before we bring them in. Because they're going to get all our nice furniture nasty. And at the next meeting, there becomes a split in the club membership. And most of the members, they want to stop the club's life-saving activities. It's getting too unpleasant, and it's kind of hindering the social life of the club. But some of the members insist, no, we're a life-saving station. That's our primary purpose. And they split, and there was a vote, and they went on down the beach a ways, and they opened up a different little hut and started saving shipwrecked lives. And history keeps repeating itself. And now if you go there, there's just life-saving station after life-saving station along the shore, and lots of people drowning. You know, I think that's what happens when we sit around and we get in the mode of grumbling about the Zacchaeus, rather than saying, what's God doing here, and are we supporting it, or are we fighting against it? Let us have humble hearts, and please join me in prayer. Holy God, we don't ever want to be just a life-saving...